are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Detroit basketball!
What's the deal? Welcome back to another episode of the Locked On Pistons podcast. This episode is brought to you by Rock Auto. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Visit rockauto.com and tell them Locked On sent you. I am your host, Kuka Hill. As always, you can find me on Twitter at Kuka Hill NBA. You can find me over at Detroit Bad Boys. Writing articles about the Pistons. You can find me on YouTube at Kuz Ballroom. And like I tell you guys, every podcast has credential for the 2019-2020 season, so that kind of makes me a big deal. But today we're going to talk about Killian. We're going to talk a little bit about Sekou and a little bit about Davidas Savidis. And honestly, there's a lot of like little short, like quick hitters I want to talk about. But before we get into that, I just want to let you guys know we have a special guest here today. One of my friends that I've made on Twitter over the years. His name is Hal Brittius. You can find him on Twitter at Hal Brittius. Hal, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. It's a pleasure to be on the Locked On Pistons podcast. It's awesome to be on here with you. It's been great to see you kick this off again. I'm really enjoying it, and I'm glad to be here.
Yep, I'm glad to have you on, man. I had Sham last week. I got you this week. I'm planning on getting Laz on here soon, but I had to get Hal on here because, like I've mentioned to you guys, I'm not the big draft guy. I'm not good with the, like, I don't watch college sports and everything, but Hal is more of that draft kind of person. He knows more about these guys before they come into the draft, so I'm sure I'll probably have Hal on a lot heading into the offseason or in the offseason to talk about more drafts, though, because I'm not going to sit here and act like I'm some expert with it. But anyways, let's talk about Killian, someone Hal was extremely high on, I believe, if I remember
correctly. I definitely was.
Yeah. 100%. Him and Laz are definitely two of the guys I've seen that are the highest about Killian. So I know we've talked about Killian a lot in the podcast, but it's like obviously he's the top pick and he's been back, so obviously we're going to talk about him. But there is one something specific I want to talk to Hal about because he's so high on Killian. There's something I want to bring up and talk with him about. So I'm going to bring this up, Hal, and I'll just let you respond and you can tell me what you think about it. But so with Killian, I tweeted out yesterday during, or it wouldn't be yesterday when this was published, it would be 2 days ago on Saturday. I tweeted out that Killian, for me, he can be throughout a 48-minute game for me. He can be some fun to watch, and then he also be extremely frustrating for me to watch. And this is why for me. Obviously he's a great passer. He has great vision. But I feel like, so like seeing him make these passes, that's the fun part about it. Like seeing him make these passes and hit guys like on time, not just making the reach, but making the reach quickly. That's really fun to see. But then also there's times, and I pointed, I believe in, I think it was two games ago. There was a few times that like he made some kickouts, but I feel like he passed up wide open layups at the rim to make these passes. And then also there's times where not only does he just kick out when he could have a layup, there's multiple times I feel like where he gets 2 feet in the paint and just doesn't shoot the ball. And when he's like in front of the rim, he could do it with a runner or just a real quick layup, I believe he could do. And a lot of times he catches himself in between like lobs to Isaiah Stewart sometimes that get turned over. Or like I believe last game he had one when he got stuck in the air. Instead of shooting the ball, he threw it to the corner and turned it over. But that's some of the, that's where I'm at with Killian as of right now. I see why people were so high on him at the beginning of the year. I'm not going to lie, I was a bit more critical. But I see why now people are so high on him. I get the thing, like the big thing with him. But also, it's just like sometimes it's extremely frustrating to watch him as well for me, because I know that he doesn't have like that all-around offensive package yet. I just feel like that, especially when he gets 2 feet in the paint, I feel like a shot has to go up sometimes, especially when he's like right in front of the rim.
Yeah, I think it's to his benefit that we've already recognized the passing as like a strong suit. And I think also it's nice for him defensively. He's staying on the floor because he's doing pretty well on that end. And I think if this was Sekou's rookie year, we'd be ecstatic about that, right? Like we'd be really excited that he's just like able to stay on the floor. So I think we should give him credit for that. Now, as far as the shooting is concerned, I think we throw it back to his first couple games before he got hurt. And you'll remember he got the crap kicked out of him by some rim protectors early on. Like, I think Andre Drummond, like, nailed the shot out of the park, like, three times on him in the first Cavs game. So there's definitely been, I think, a little bit of a fear of shot blocking. He didn't really have to go against that when he was in Europe. Most of the European bigs are, like, what we would think of as more traditional centers. They're not the kind of guys who are really going to get up like Bismack Biyombo did in the Hornets game. You know, that's just something that's going to scare him. We saw it the same way with Sadiq Bey in his first few games, right? Just wasn't finishing around the rim. I think Killian's been more scared. Like, Sadiq kept challenging it and was just failing to score early on. And I think we've just seen Killian not take those shots. That's a confidence issue. He's got to correct it. At this point, I'm just kind of happy he's on the court. You know, I think we're all in game 65 mode or whatever it is now. We're wrapping the season up. This is game 16 for him, something like that. You know, so these are the kind of learning curves that your regular rookie has to go through. And I think we're just maybe not used to seeing it as much from somebody this late in the season with the expectations Killian had. It's definitely a problem. You know, I think it's mostly rooted in some biomechanical things for him. He's just not getting the lift. He's not getting lift on his shot. He's not getting lift on layups. I think a lot of that's probably due to some of the offseason and the lack of the workouts. I think we're seeing it with Seiko a little bit too. So hopefully that after, like, hopefully next year we come in, we see him a little stronger around the rim, a little more aggressive. We see it now and then in spurts where he's like, okay, I'm gonna go after it. I'll put up four or five shots in a quarter. And we just got to hope that grows and continues, and that next year he comes out stronger.
So I'll ask you this. I agree with all that. That definitely probably does have something to do with it, because he's not on. I think that was a really good point you mentioned about us being like on game 65 and he's only on game, what, 19? I think it is 19, 20. So that makes sense. But I'll also ask you this about Killian. Also, if you guys didn't pay attention earlier, how really high on Killian. Did a lot of scouting with him before the draft, so he knows a ton about him from before the draft, or before we drafted him. But are you at least a little concerned at all about? So, like, you paid attention to the podcast I made a few podcasts ago when I compared him to Lonzo, and you tweeted about it. Me and you went a little bit back and forth with it. So my thing was, if anyone who didn't pay attention or didn't listen to that podcast, what I was saying was, is that Lonzo is pretty good in the pick and roll now. I believe last time I checked, he was in the 87th percentile in pick and rolls. But at the beginning, that's not where he was. He had like this kind of the same issue that Killian was dealing with right now, that he couldn't shoot and he couldn't bend the defense at the rim. So even though he had really good passing and really good vision, he couldn't really take advantage of it because he couldn't bend the defense. Lonzo eventually was able to develop a really good 3-point shot, so that kind of helps him now. But are you concerned at all about, from what you've seen so far in him, the NBA, like, I know, like you mentioned, he didn't really deal with rim protectors and overseas as much as he did now. Are you worried at all that basically, are you just chucking it up to the fact that he's not used to rim protectors in the NBA, or are you seeing some things that would be like, I believe he can do it, but I see reason to believe that maybe he's going to struggle with this throughout his career?
Well, we knew he had like athletic limitations. Right. He was never going to be, you know, John Morant athletically. So there was going to be a learning curve there. I was hoping he was going to be, you know, further along and more aggressive than this. Am I worried? No. Am I adjusting my expectations a little bit? Yes. You know, but like, we saw Darius Garland have a really rough rookie year for some of the same reasons, just didn't look like he could compete athletically. And then he's kind of figured it out. And I look at guys like Luka Doncic, for example, is a guy who is not even remotely that athletic compared to the NBA standard, but he's figured out, you know, all these tricks and you know, how to decelerate and change speeds. So I think there's still a chance that he becomes a really good player. But, I mean, I'm definitely recalibrating the timeline for my expectations. I was hoping he'd be a little further along there. You know, it might be year three, year four before we see him, you know, really taking off. But again, we've seen this with other players. Jamal Murray is another great example of a guy who, when he first came in, couldn't hit shots and couldn't finish. And we just really were like, what does Jamal Murray do? And, you know, now Jamal Murray's you know, an all-star caliber player who looks like he can be the second best player on a contender. That's so I'm not worried because I think Killian's shot looks great. He just has really bad footwork issues right now. He's really struggling to get on balance. Once he figures that out, and I think that's the kind of thing that he could come back from an offseason and have that figured out, he's an 88 or something, 90% free throw shooter. Like, those are the kinds of things I just think with time we're going to see improve. You know, again, I don't know that he's ever going to be a super-duper star because he lacks that elite athleticism. Good Lord. But, I still have a lot of faith that he's going to be really, really good.
All right, well, I'm going to actually – I have one more question I want to ask you when we come back from this break, and then we can get into some other things we're going to talk about. But before we get to that, let me tell you about our first sponsor, Indeed. You're the hiring expert for your company, and what you really need is help making the short list of quality candidates. You need a hiring partner who helps make your life easier. You need Indeed. Indeed is a job site that makes hiring as easy as 1, 2, 3. Post, screen, and interview all on Indeed. Indeed makes connecting with and hiring the right talent fast and easy. With tools like Indeed Instant Match, giving you quality candidates whose resume on Indeed fits your job description immediately, reduces hiring time by 27%. According to Talent Nest, Indeed delivers 4 times more hires than all other job sites combined. Get started right now with a free $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/locked. Again, go to Indeed.com/locked for a $75 credit valid through June 30th. Terms and conditions apply. If you're hiring, you need Indeed. All right, Hal, so like I was saying, I want to extend this talk about Killian. Just one more question, and then we can move on to something else. Honestly, I think we're going to talk about a little bit about Sadiq, something I tweeted yesterday. But last question I want to ask you about Killian. One of the things that's really, like, one of the things that's concerned me more than anything, and I don't know if I've seen you talk about it a lot. I saw you talk about it a little bit, but I think you focused on other things more. But something that's really concerned me is his right hand, because I know everyone talked about, you know, the NBA, once you get an NBA offseason, you can develop all these things. Like, he didn't get an NBA offseason to do that because of the pandemic, etc. And I get that with all the other things, but in my opinion, I might be wrong. I may, like, some trainers may talk to me and say, oh yeah, you're stupid. But in my opinion, a right hand is something that you can, like, develop without NBA training. Like, you can develop that on your own. You don't need, not that you don't need training, but I'm sure he doesn't need, like, I wouldn't say you need NBA level training to develop a right hand or improve your right hand. And I was expecting that to be better than it was coming into the season. And tell me if I'm wrong, but there's been times where he just completely avoids and just, like, ignores even attempting, like, his right hand at the rim. There's a few times where I feel like he could easily have, like, a right hand scoop. Like, even if he's not good with it, there's been a few times where I feel like the worst people with their right hand could have got it, 'cause it's like, they're just giving it to him. Is that a concern? Is that more of a concern to you, or do you, like, where would you place that as on your level of concerns? Like, everything we've talked about, where would you place his right hand on your level of concern with him?
So it's similar to the shot, where I think it's actually more of a confidence issue than it is a skill level issue. You may not believe me, his right hand was worse in Europe. You know, he has actually improved it. There's some passes he makes now where he's, like, much better at gathering the ball and getting passes off with more of his right hand involved. You know, like, the joke was, like, he couldn't pass to the left side of the floor last year. Like, that was a thing where he, like, if somebody was open on the left side and he had to, it was either he'd turn his whole body around to pass to him, or it wasn't happening because he couldn't gather the ball with his right hand. So, like, it's gotten better. He still has to improve it. Now, I think it is a little overblown by some people because quite a few players don't ever use their offhand. They just have a lot more counters to it than, you know, than Killian does right now, and they're a lot more confident than Killian is right now. So I think this is one of the things, as he gets more comfortable attacking shot blockers, etc., I think we're going to see it a little more. Certainly he can improve. I definitely agree with you. You can, you know, go in your driveway and do Mike and drills, and you're going to get better with your offhand, right? It's just a getting used to the feel of the ball is all it is, from a skill perspective. But certainly it's more about confidence, and it's also about adding the decision to your decision tree. Like, as you go through your moves, are you even thinking about using your right hand? Getting that added to your process is another step that he may not have made yet. And that's something you really do gain more from in like team training and stuff. And with your coaches saying, hey, we're going to do this combination of moves. You're going to go around this screen and you're going to use your right. And we're going to do that 10 times. And then we're going to do this and you're going to go to your right and you're going to do that 10 times. That's something where coaching can really like force you to use the skill and teach you when to use the skill. And hopefully that's something they work with him this off season, and obviously going into training camp next year.
I think that probably is like one of the best points that I haven't even thought about, but it's absolutely true. So like, if you guys haven't listened to the podcast or like you don't follow me on Twitter, I always talk about how I love playing basketball. Like I played basketball my whole life. I consider myself a hooper. So like that 100%, like I can identify with that, even though like I'm not on like a bigger stage. Like that obviously is something like every hooper can, like, I feel like can identify with the fact, like, you can develop it, but if it's not already in your, like, your process tree, like you said, like you're just not going to do it. And I just got done hooping right before me and Hal started podcast, like recording this. And I can already think back to multiple times where like I thought in my head, like, yeah, I probably should use my left hand right here, but it just wasn't in my, like when I went up with it, it wasn't something that I was thinking about doing at that time. But then right after I was like, damn, should use my left right there. I would have had it. But that right there is a really good point. I really like that point Hal just made. So
thank you.
But we're gonna move on from Killian. There's one other thing we're gonna talk about Sekou later on in the podcast. So if you guys, make sure you guys stay around for that. But there is something else I want to talk with Hal about, and that's Sadiq Bey. You retweeted this tweet from me yesterday, and I really wanted to talk with you about it today. So I wrote about midway through the season about how Sadiq had improved his finishing at the rim and just getting to the rim, actually just like getting there and then also improving his finishing. So that was something he was doing like midway through the season on. He was getting really better at it. But to me, over like the past 2 weeks, maybe 2.5 weeks, I feel like that it's getting to a point now where we have to start saying like, okay, he's getting to the rim, but then also like you're taking shots now that you just can't make and you really have no chance at making. And there's just so many people wide open when he's doing this. It's getting to a point where I'm like, is it really worth doing that? Because I feel like at a certain point now you're stunning your playmaking development. And now you're also like making it a negative almost that you're trying to develop your driving, because now like defenses aren't even respecting your pass outs. They're not really they're helping really hard. Like this last game, I feel like it was really bad. There was a lot of times where he had someone wide open in the corner or wide open in the wing that I don't even feel like it was one of those tough passes that you have to make. Like they are right in your line of sight and he just didn't make it because he was trying to go up on like three guys, which like, okay, like I said, I can get that he's trying to develop that, but now I feel like it's getting to a point where it's negatively hurting him and it's hurting the team as well. What do you have to think, say about that?
Well, I think to my eyes, he looks a little gassed, and I think that's kind of affected him recently. I think he was doing some of the playmaking stuff a little more earlier in the season. I think it's also a thing where he probably has seen his role grow and thinks he's got more of a responsibility to score now than he did earlier in the season, which may be affecting his decision-making. But that's, again, one of those things that this offseason, hopefully, coaches are going to take him through some of this film and say, here's these decisions. You know, let's work on making these decisions natural and part of your game. He's never been a volume playmaker. He has the skills to be a playmaker. He's never been that. He's never had this kind of role in his career before. He didn't do this at Nova. So I think this is probably his biggest point of emphasis for the offseason, is now that you've clearly shown the NBA that you're a threat to shoot, you've shown the NBA that you can take two dribbles and pull up or get to the rim, you know, can you make that affect the wider offense around you? Can you start, you know, driving kicks and stuff like that? And I think that's the obvious next step for him in his growth as a player. So hopefully that's something he can get to in the offseason. It's definitely something he's not been doing all the time now. There's definitely been guys where I've been like, oh, Sadiq definitely missed an open one here. Then again, a lot of these guys on this team right now are not shooters. So, you know, sometimes it's like, hey, do I take this, you know, contested layup or do I pass to Sekou, who's been struggling from three? You know, it's one where maybe the right pass is the one to the shooter, but you don't feel great about it. So I can also understand that side of it.
Fair enough. I feel like that, like I said, I just feel like that's getting to a point where it's hurting him, like I said. But obviously, for everything is like they're first year players. Obviously, they'll get better with it in the offseason, hopefully, and moving forward. But I feel like that's definitely, like you said, something they need to pay attention to moving forward in the offseason, because it's, I think he's used, one of the things that is like really good to see from him is the fact he's learning how to utilize his shooting to make defenses pay for like closing out fast on him or being right up on him. And I feel like you said, playmaking is something that he has to put into his bag to make them pay for it as well. Because now, like, I feel like towards the middle of the season, like I said, they weren't really ready for him to start trying this driving to the rim, and he was getting better at it. Now they're like adjusting to that. So now he needs to add that kick out. I'm not expecting him to be like an elite playmaker, but just being able to make that pass, like we were saying, to like the corner or just the wing, like right in your line of sight when you're driving to the rim. I think that's the next thing he gets to do, and hopefully they do in the offseason. But stick around. We're going to talk about Sekou, and there's also a few other things I want to talk about with Hal. So we're at 20 minutes right now. I think this is probably going to go to about 40, 45 minutes. I think this last segment is going to last a little bit because there's a lot of things I want to ask him. But let me tell you about one of our sponsors, BetOnline AG. Betting is now legal in Michigan, and if you're anything like me, you want to take advantage of that instantly. However, there was one problem that I ran into. There's just so many different apps to bet through. Which betting app is best to use? Which one is best for me to use? That's when I found BetOnline, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. The NFL season might be over, but the NBA, NHL, and MLB are all in full swing now. If you want to take your adventures beyond sports, however, BetOnline has you covered there too. Like I tell you guys every podcast, I have no clue that BetOnline or even like any place could even allow you to bet on awards, TV shows, reality TV. I didn't even know that was possible. But BetOnline has you covered there too. BetOnline has real-time updated odds, props, and just about anything you can imagine. BetOnline is the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head over to BetOnline now to sign up and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit, and make sure you use your promo code LOCKEDON. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. And your favorite sponsor, let me tell you guys about these guys, Built Bar. The best tasting protein bar on the planet Earth comes with a variety of flavors, including 6 new flavors in caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond, carrot cake, and apple almond crisp. I know you guys heard me emphasize that cherry barcia, but all flavors are covered in incredible tasting chocolate and are soft and easy on the teeth to chew. These bars are low in calorie and sugar, but high in protein and fiber. A flavor I suggest is the peanut butter flavor. I love peanut butter. You put peanut butter on anything, I'll probably eat it. I absolutely love peanut butter. But it's packed with 19 grams of protein, 180 calories, only 5 grams of sugar, and 5 grams net carbs. So go try a Built Bar. Go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCK15 and you'll get 15% off your next order. Again, use promo code LOCK15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar ever. So right before we started this podcast, I actually was trolling with me and Hal were trolling about that whole cherry barcia thing. And Hal didn't know it was a play on that dude's name either. Okay, so it's not just me, everybody that came into my DMs. I'm not the only one who did not know that it was a play on anything.
It took me a couple pods. It took me a couple. I'm not going to lie.
So
you're killing the ad reads now, though. Doing great.
Appreciate it. But everyone that was saying something to me about not knowing that it was a play on, was it Jerry Garcia or Freddie Garcia? I had no clue. And I'm not the only one. But anyways, like I said, we're going to talk about Sekou and a few other things. But first, I want to talk about Sekou. You guys all know that I love talking about Sekou, and it's one of the bigger topics for me. So, Hal, let me get your thoughts on this. So, for me, I've said this multiple times already, like the last few weeks. Sekou, since the New York DMP, I feel like if Sekou had played like how he has since then, all season, if he played like that all season, everybody would be happy with how he's been. Everyone would be happy with his sophomore year. Everyone would be like, oh, look, we can obviously the improvements, blah, blah. But everyone's just so soured on Sekou now is that they just don't even care now. Everything he does is just trash, and they don't look at these little things that he's doing that's developing. I feel like that there's been almost every game now when he tries to get to the rim, he gets there. That's a really big thing for me. He's not finishing always, but that's something you can polish in the offseason. The fact that he's getting there is really good, and you can polish that up in the offseason as he gets stronger and help him with being stronger on his finishes instead of trying to be like finesse, whatever. But there's also other things. I feel like he's been better on defense as well. But basically my question for you is, do you feel like that he's actually shown process or development over the last few weeks since that DMP? And are you higher than some of the people that we see on Pistons Twitter? Are you higher on him heading into the offseason than you were, like, let's say like a month and a half ago, 2 months ago, when he was just like not playing at all? Are you higher now that after the last few weeks that you've seen from him?
That's an interesting. I guess I've always been high on Sekou, and I've always assumed that like this is going to be a big offseason for him. So I don't know if I'm higher now. I feel more justified in how high I feel about Sekou. You know, there's definitely been things. He's another one where it's like I wonder how much the lack of an offseason last year hurt him. You know, I think you and I have talked about this a bit before, but like there's been times where he's looked less athletic than he did last year and just, you know, doesn't look like he's had the same kind of vertical pop. Is that stuff that he, you know, suffered in the offseason, didn't get the right workouts in? You know, he's had trouble like under the rim loading up on like standing dunks and stuff. So he goes to these finesse finishes. He's a better athlete than that. He shouldn't need to do that. Is that stuff where it's a lack of confidence? Is that stuff where he's not reading the game right? Or is it just a lack of strength and ability because he didn't get the right workouts in? I'm really curious to see where he is next year, because I think there's a lot of things for him that have regressed this year. Like his shooting has regressed this year. He was not a bad free throw shooter prior to this year, and he's been pretty rough at the line lately. How much of that is something he can improve with, you know, a good offseason and hopefully spending time in the new, what is it, the cruise now? You know, being able to go to the Motor City Cruise next year instead of just hanging out in practice when he's in the doghouse, hopefully that makes a big difference for him. But, I mean, if you are interested in Sekou at all, you have an above average level of interest, right? There's a lot of people who've just kind of quit on that. And it's understandable why, but in a tanking season also, that's kind of one of the things you're going to have to pay attention to, because that's one of the few storylines we get.
So actually, I would say I don't see why I don't see the fairness and or like the reason to just quit on him. So because, correct me if I'm wrong, and this is going to be a little bit of a rant. Some people may be like, oh, here we go again. But this is just another run of those rants I'm about to get. When the Pistons drafted Sekou a few years ago, Hal, correct me if I'm wrong, like weren't we all aware that he was a project and someone that was going to take a few years? Like we were not expecting him to even come into the the season and play. Like were we not all aware of this?
Yeah, I think the thing people weren't aware of is what a project entailed, right? I don't think we had a project like that in a while. You know, our last project was like Stanley Johnson. It was like, okay, we all see. You know, I think it was very obvious to see what Stanley did and didn't do, and then it was just a question of how do you make an NBA player out of that. With Sekou, it took a while for us to even figure out what his strengths and weaknesses were. So that's a lot harder on fans than I think we've had in a while.
And so another thing I want to point out is that so we were aware that he was a project coming into the like his rookie season. We're not even, like, I've made this point all year, and people kept saying, oh, Koo, you're going to end up one of those people who would be like, oh, well, he's only 25. He still has a future. Yeah, that joke would be funny if he was actually close to 25. He's 20. Like, it would actually be, that joke you guys say would actually be funny if he wasn't 20. And the big thing that I always point out is the fact that he's just now, like, last month, like 2 weeks ago, crossed over 82 NBA games played. So he had just crossed the NBA season worth of playing time. So it's just like, the fact that so many people have given up is like so like mind blowing to me and extremely annoying, because we haven't even seen like we just seen like what would be equivalent to an NBA rookie season from him. He had just crossed that, and like you've pointed this out before multiple times already on Twitter, he's played more minutes last year than he did this year. So it's like it's just mind blowing to me that like okay, maybe he's not like he didn't make like this big jump that some people were expecting. But development isn't linear. It's not always just straightforward. Like, some people take a step back, like, two steps forward, a step back, and then another two steps forward. Like, sometimes that's how it goes. And especially the thing to me is that just makes me laugh. It's the funniest. Like, I saw this happen yesterday, and I seriously was sitting there laughing. It's just the funniest thing to me. People can be like, oh, well, look at the things we're seeing from Sadiq or Isaiah Stewart or Killian or Frank Jackson or even Tyler freaking Cook. They can see like these little tiny things that they do right there. And everyone's like, oh my God, we can see it. Look at them making these tiny improvements. But God forbid me point out the fact that Sekou did a good rotation on defense and point that out. Everyone's like, dude, just give up on him. He sucks, blah, blah. When he's younger than every guy just named besides freaking, what, Killian, isn't he? Isaiah Stewart's younger than him, isn't he? Isaiah's also younger. But it's just dumb to me. It's really dumb to me because, especially like I've said, since the New York DMP, I've really liked how he's played. I think he's really like took a step above how he was playing beforehand, and just has been playing more confident, more aggressive on both sides of the ball. I feel like Pistons fans and like people who follow the team and like try to like analyze the team should be pointing this out. Like, no one really points this out besides me and you, I feel like. Like, no one really talks about the fact that Sekou has legit looked better since New York, because everyone's so quick to call him out and be done with him before. But now that he's looked better, everyone acts like he's like some 24-year-old who's not in the team's plans anymore. He's too old or something. And it's just like, it's really dumb. What do you think about that? I just, it's one of those rants, one of those things that get me really hot, and just, I can't take it.
No, it's all about expectations, right? It's all about calibrating expectations to what the reality is, right? When Sadiq Bey comes in, you look at him and you go, here's a rookie, but he's a rookie who is, I want to double check. He is 21. So like, he's a rookie with a lot of experience, and he's older, and he's also a guy who has like a very obvious role in the NBA. So Sadiq comes in, and basically our expectation is prove that you can be an NBA player and prove that you can fulfill the obvious role we have set out for you. And he's exceeded that expectation, right? Everybody just wanted to basically like, can you earn 16 minutes a game on this team as a 3-point shooter, 3-and-D wing guy? Cool. For Sekou, he came in, we didn't really know what he was, didn't know where he'd play. Was he a 3? Was he a 4? I kind of think that he might have some value at the 5 position myself, but we don't really know. And so every time we see him succeed or fail, part of it is, what were you expecting out of that situation? Sometimes it's, okay, he's been put in a really hard spot. You know, he got asked to start earlier this year against LeBron, and it was a really bad game for Sekou, but it's a game against LeBron. What'd you expect? Right? Those are learning experiences that he should grow from. And if your takeaway from that is, oh, he sucks, well, then your expectations are wrong, right? You're right in saying he's growing these last few games. We're seeing things we want to see from him in terms of he's attacking the rim. He's made some really nice defensive plays. He's also just reading the game like a beat faster than he was earlier this season. He's kind of grown into that with some more consistent minutes. You know, setting expectations by looking at where he is now and where you'd like him to be next game, and where you'd like him to be a week from now, and where you'd like him to be a month from now, and trying to be realistic about that is the best way to go forward. Because if you keep hoping that he's going to come out and be, you know, is he going to be Pascal Siakam all of a sudden? Like, no, it's not going to happen, right? That's going to be, you know, two off seasons worth of work, a whole bunch of game minutes, and then hopefully that's, you know, what we see. That's way down the road. So if that's all you're looking at is he Pascal Siakam yet, yes or no, you're always going to be sad.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, and something I think Pistons fans, everyone listen to this podcast should listen to, because I'm really getting sick of everybody tweeting me, getting mad that I'm talking about Sekou's development, like as if he's not part of the young core. Like, it's just really annoying to me, because it's very clear to me that everyone has already kicked Sekou out the young core and has said that he's just not part of the future. On basically, like, actually, this is a funny question. Actually, I don't know if you know this off the top of your head. How many more minutes has Sadiq Bey or has Sekou played than Sadiq Bey in their careers? Like, is it close? I'd wonder if it's close.
Sekou has played total this year. Where are we at? Minutes played. Sekou Doumbouya has played 700 minutes this year. Sadiq Bey is up at 1,600. So Sadiq Bey has currently played more minutes than Sekou has, period, because I don't think Sekou is – I think it was at 750 last year. So yeah, I think Sadiq Bey is like 150 more minutes already.
Yeah, so Sadiq Bey literally has more career minutes than Sekou does. Like, come on, guys. Like, let's just take a chill pill here. Let's take a step back. But whatever, I'm going to stop ranting by Sekou. I'm sure everyone's sick of hearing me talk about Sekou, but you guys are going to have to deal with it, because I'm going to be one of the one guys who continue to talk about Sekou as if he's part of the young core. I know everyone else is completely done with him, but I'm not. I still have high hopes for him down the line, so I'm going to continue to analyze him and treat him fairly. Last question, a quick hitter about Sekou. Do you think that Sekou is a part of this young core still, or do you think he's on his way out?
Oh yeah, I think he is, and mostly because there's no investment incoming for him. Like there's no reason to give up on him now, because it's if you give up on him, you're not going to get anything for him, right? So either he's still in the picture for the rest of his contract, or he's not. And this, I don't see any reason to leave him up by the wayside. So we might as well find out what we've got, especially when you've got a G League team that should be opening up next season. You know, the worst thing that happens is you play him in the cruise.
Fair enough. All right, so next thing, we're at 34 minutes. We're probably going to get to around 45 minutes because there's some other things I want to talk to Hal about. So Hal, this is going to be a real quick, this one's going to be short, and then I want to talk to you about Duvia Savitas. This is just like a question I want to ask you because I've dealt with like the problems of this. Dwayne Casey. So like obviously this is a tanking season. I've given him props. I think this is his best season so far with the Pistons coaching. I've said that. But have you dealt with the problem that I've dealt with? Like, so for example, when he, I think it was the New York game, when he trucked out five guards out there, or like four guards and Tyler Cook, I think it was, and it was just like, oh, we have guards guarding Julius Randle. Like, I was so heated and was like complaining about it and criticizing it, and everyone, literally everyone in Pistons Twitter, including like our boys, our friends that we talk with, they were all like, well, it's a tanking season, or he's done tried everything. But like, we didn't try everything. It was only like 5 minutes into the game. Like it wasn't like we had done exhausted all options. It was just a bad thing. But people were like, oh, it's just a tanking season. Who cares? And then there's also other things that happens, like with his use of Sekou that I've critiqued, or like things that happens within a game I'll critique. But basically everyone always chalks it up to, oh, it's a tanking season, so it doesn't really matter. He's doing what he has to do. Do you struggle with the balance that I've struggled with understanding it's a tanking season, but then also finding, like, understanding that there's things that you have to critique, tanking or not, but, like, which things do you chuck it up to just, oh, well, we're tanking, whatever, or which parts do you say, okay, this is actually something I need to talk about because it's really dumb?
Well, it's definitely hard because, like, the Hamidou lineup where he, like, puts Hamidou out there with, like, four non-shooters.
Yes.
Oh, you and I hate. But like, I'm pretty sure that lineup's out there to tank. Like I'm like 85% sure that lineup's just out there to bleed points. You know, my issue that I've always had with this is people like to assume that Dwayne Casey knows everything, or that any coach, right? Any coach is infallible. They're at practice. They must know. And it's like sometimes they have a different scope of vision than we do, right? We get to sit and watch, you know, the games from the TV broadcast. We're making decisions with a different timeline in mind, with a different vision entirely. Sometimes the fans can be right and coaches take a while to figure it out. Sometimes they're stubborn, sometimes it goes against their philosophies. You know, so it's not saying like we're always right and we know everything. Absolutely not. But sometimes we can ask questions that they're not asking themselves because they don't have the motivation to. And that's okay. And you shouldn't get immediate pushback just because you're asking a question of the coach. There have been times where Dwayne Casey has been a very bad coach when he's intended to be a good one. And, you know, he got fired in Toronto because even though he had, you know, really good moments and led a team to the playoffs multiple times, they had a lot of questions for him. Like, that's just the reality of it. So I've also, like you, I've given him a lot of credit. I think this is his best coach season by far. I think he's done X and O stuff that he didn't do before. I think obviously he's had a good hand in player development, all that, but it's also okay to ask questions of when we think he is doing something wrong. And that should be all fair game.
All right. So thank God you feel the same as me, because it's just like something I've dealt with all year. I mean, it's just like really annoying for me to, like, anytime I critique, like, my thing is that everyone can critique all the players, but God forbid me say anything about Dwayne Casey, it's automatically chucked up to, oh, it's a tanking season, give him a break, blah, blah. But then, like, everything else they want to give him props for, and it's impossible just to critique him. Like, I've made it known that I've been one of the main people who is not afraid to critique Dwayne Casey, but I've also given him his props this season. But it's just, like, it's really annoying for me to, like, and it's hard for me to find the balance between, okay, like, it's tanking, and then also, like, okay, this is just purely stupid, I have to say something about it. And like you said, we're not saying we're right all the time. I'm sure he has, obviously, he's behind the scenes more, he knows stuff that we don't, but there's also, like, moments, like, we just, like, he's wrong. Like, he's not going to be perfect. We're not perfect either, but he's going to be wrong. We're going to be wrong. I think it's fair, like you said, to point that out sometimes. And it's just really annoying when, like, anytime I say something about him, I'm getting pushback by every fan. Like, come on, it's tanking. He led a team to the conference finals, blah, blah, all that stuff. Like, I don't care. Like, it's fair to critique. Like, I don't care what anyone said. I'm still hot about that New York Knicks lineup. I know it was weeks ago, and I know everyone, like, got on me. I'm still heated about that. I don't care what anyone says. We were 5 minutes into that damn game. I don't care how much we were down. It was only, like, a 17-point game. We see teams come back from 20s before. It was 5 minutes into the game, and we pretty much just said, screw it. We're just gonna throw four guards out there against Julius Randle. He wanted to score, like, 16 points, I think, the rest of the quarter. I'm still pissed about that. But anyways, we're going to talk about Davidas real quick. I've seen you talk about him a little bit. God, that New York Knicks thing really makes me hot, dude. I'm just got hot all over again, dude, over that damn New York Knicks lineup. but anyway, we're gonna talk about Davidas real quick. You tweeted out earlier that he's basically, I think Omari had it in his article today, but he's at 240 now. He was at like he was skinny as hell when we first drafted him, and the fact he's there is crazy. He's putting a lot of work to get there. Do you know anything about him, basically? Like, I'll just ask you that and let you answer that, because I don't know literally anything about him.
So when I was looking at him before we drafted him, I saw, like, a really skinny dude who was, like, 6'8", who was doing kind of some Luke Kennard stuff, like, lots of catch-and-shoot stuff, but also some funky drives, you know, really, really leveraging the shot to get to the rim, kind of a smooth ball handler. And then that was all, like, as a teenager. Fast forward 2 years, he's now 20. You know, clearly he's an NBA 4. And so my big question was, once he put on the weight that he clearly had to put on, I mean, we saw him in Summer League 2 years ago, and it was he got blown around like a leaf in the wind. It was bad. You know, so clearly he had to put on the weight. I'm pretty happy that he's managed to get up to about 240 now. That seems like a pretty healthy space for him. He looks like an NBA body now. Right, he doesn't look like he's a kid on the floor anymore. The question for me was, can he move his feet? Can he still do any of the stuff with the ball in his hands? You know, is he just going to be, you know, theoretically like a pick and pop shooter, you know, a corner shooter? Can he put the ball on the floor? Can he attack off the catch? You know, he was running dribble handoffs. He was running isolations at the youth level. Can he do any of that at the NBA level? We haven't seen it so far, so that's still my question, is what do we see from him? You know, it's kind of annoying. The last game, he caught a couple of rebounds and then, like, got yelled at to, like, pass the ball to his guard. It was like, no, this is a guy who was doing ball handling when he was in Lithuania and stuff. Let him ball handle. Let him take up the ball up the court. Who cares if he turns it over? Like, I want to see it. So that's my question, is because he showed that skill early on. And I don't know whether or not that's going to translate now that he's up, you know, up at 240. I don't know if he's still, he had a decent amount of, like, first step burst before. Does he still have any of that? I don't know. I am pleased to see, like, there was a drive Miles Bridges had on him last night, against the Hornets, where Miles took him to the rim and finished over him. But I saw Dave, you know, move his feet, stay relatively in front of him. He was, you know, he wasn't connected enough to stop the layup, but he was still in front. That alone is, like, a really positive thing for me, because that says, hey, at least we have this 6'10 guy, 6'10, 240, who isn't just getting destroyed by a really athletic wing. I'm curious to see what we have moving forward. We've got him for a couple of years still. So, you know, I think everybody still has questions. I'm not entirely sure any one of us that's not in practice knows anything about him anymore, because his draft footage even was pretty sparse to begin with. But I have been happy that he doesn't look like an absolute child out there.
Yeah, so, like, my thing with him is that, like you said, I literally know nothing about him. Like, literally nothing. Like, I don't know what to expect from this dude. And it's crazy. The thing about it is, like, he signed, like, that multi-year contract before the year. And, like, we've seen nothing from him. Like, I'm not joking when I say nothing. I'm not like exaggerating. It's literally nothing I know about him. So, like, I feel like that we should get some minutes from him down the line to at least see, like, what the Pistons have from him, at least, like, where he's at right now. And we got some last game, but I don't know. It's just, like, he's one of those guys that, like, it's really confusing, because they made, like, a multiple – they, like, trade a couple picks, I believe, didn't they? They trade, like, 2 second-rounders to move up and get him.
3 seconds, yep.
Three seconds to move up and get this dude. And then and then gave him a multi-year contract as well before the year. So it's like you've invested a ton into him, obviously. You have invested a lot. So it's like you figured that you would get to see something out of him. And I don't know. I hope that for his – I hope literally that we don't just, like, move him or, like, give up. Or, like, isn't – I believe you can, like, release him in the offseason. His contract's not guaranteed. I believe there's, like, something in there with his contract. You can do that. But, like, with as much as you've invested into him, I hope that you don't do that and, like, actually just see where he can go. And I'm interested to see what he can do down the stretch. I'm assuming he's going to get some minutes, so I'm interested to see what happens down the stretch.
And he's another one. Next year in the G League, I'm going to be watching that closely because I'm sure he's going to get, you know, 1,000 minutes in the G League next year. He's only had 46, I think, this year total. That's 49, excuse me, 49 minutes, and basically only one of those has probably been more than like a 6-minute stretch. So like you said, it's literally nothing.
Yeah, so hopefully we get to see more of him down the line. Pistons have invested a lot into him. We need to see some. We need to at least see what's there. We're at 45 minutes. We're going to wrap this up now, but there's one. I just want a quick yes or no, Hal, real quick. Do the Pistons continue to tank and like to sit their veterans the rest of the way? Do they continue to sit Mason Plumlee, Jeremy Grant, Corey Joseph the rest of the way these final games?
Jeremy Grant plays 4 games.
Oh, fair enough. There you go. You gave me even more of an exact answer. I appreciate it. That right there. We're going to hold Hal to it down the line. Thank you, Hal, for coming on the podcast. We're going to have you on a lot. I'm going to at least invite you a lot. I'm going to invite him a lot because he's really good with the draft. He does that kind of stuff. And like I've told you guys, I'm not going to pretend to be an expert in nothing, but we're going to make sure we get a ton of those.
I am pretending to be an expert. I'll pretend.
Hal's pretending to be one of those guys you see on ESPN during the draft. Like, he's one of those guys. We're going to have him on here. We're going to treat him as such. But for real, Hal, thank you for coming on here really late. We recorded this at like 8 o'clock at night, so thank you for coming on here.
No, thank you.
Everyone, make sure you guys go follow him on Twitter @HalBridius. Thank you guys for listening. I believe the Pistons play tonight against. Do you know who they play against, Hal?
No.
I have no idea who they play against.
Right. I just show up here tonight.
Yeah. Oh no, they play the Magic today. A big game, actually. Big game in the draft tank. The tank season. We have to lose this.
Tankathon rankings.
Yeah. So enjoy the game tonight. Have fun. And we'll catch you guys on the next podcast. Peace out, everybody.